You're listening to DraftKings Network.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
We are now officially this hour welcoming Courting Chaos. We're bringing in Amin El-Hassan, fresh off his greatest shame. Poppy has entered the studio. Michelle Tafoya is around the corner. Put on the poll, please, Roy, at Le Batard Show. How's Tafoya going to go? Chaos, inflammatory, awkward, or cordial are your choices. Michelle Tafoya will be here in a second. First take, Mad Dog Russo right now is yelling at Stephen A. Smith. We're going to get an update from the other room. Got to wish a happy 53rd birthday to Ice Cube.
Happy birthday to him. I don't care. Good luck.
All of my favorite rappers are over 50 now. You can always send your criticism toward the show. Somebody writes in, please have Juju or anyone else redo Mike Ryan's Miller light read. It's soaked with heavy flaming D-bag vibes and forces its listeners to tap that fast forward button, immediately rendering the ad useless. I know that's Mike's thing, to be that guy. I know, but it's really, really bad. Almost as bad as Jurassic World 3 was. When the credits popped up, I couldn't believe it was over. Shoulda saw the Bob's Burgers movie.
He's that guy.
And then there's a stray here. Roy is always overly aggressive for no reason. It's a bit too much and uncomfortable.
You don't get the show.
To Americas.
Poppy is in the studio. Amin, we're going to go to Tony in a second because Stephen A. Smith is now yelling at Mad Dog. But Amin, do you want to tell my father what happened to you and what represents your greatest career shame?
I would love to tell Poppy about one of my greatest career triumphs, which is the episode of Basketball Illuminati that came out today. We talk a little bit about the finals, but we talk a lot about the 2014 NBA Finals Game 1 where the AC went out in San Antonio. It's a crazy story. We had some nice sourcing on there from San Antonio beat writer Dan McCarney, from Izzy Gutierrez of ESPN, and it is incredible. I think people forget how insane that day was, so I urge everybody to go check out that episode. It is, I believe, the best episode of Basketball Illuminati we've ever done. Basketball Illuminati, Basketball Illuminati, Basketball Illuminati. Say it three times to keep your third eye open. Poppy, do you remember when the Spurs cut the AC in Game 1 and LeBron had to cramp and he couldn't finish the game and they ended up winning the game on a 16-3 run?
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember that that when the AC was cut off, yeah.
The Spurs cheated, right?
Well, it looks that way to me. I don't know what anybody else thinks, but that's, you know.
Well, you're going to find out what people think on Basketball Illuminati where they get to the bottom of all of the conspiracies.
Didn't answer Dan's question, though.
Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
Did the Spurs cheat?
Oh, about that? Did the Spurs cheat? I don't want to give it away, Dan. It's a little bit of a spoiler, but we compile a list of suspects on the podcast. We go through each suspect, their motive, and how they had opportunity. Motive and opportunity. That's what a good detective looks for. That's what we try to do on Basketball Illuminati.
You also have not answered the question that we had you on for, which is to reveal to Poppy your greatest shame from yesterday. Are you going to continue to deflect maybe till the postgame show?
Well, you know, I just feel like there's a lot of great content that we have here at Metalark Media. It's the middle of Matthew McConaughey month, and tomorrow we have the latest episode of Cinephobe that drops featuring Mike Ryan, the aforementioned D-bag. As we tackle Two for the Money. It's a gambling movie, Dan. I don't know if you remember this one. It had Al Pacino in it.
Turn his microphone
Matthew McConaughey.
Turn his microphone off.
I'm just saying, you know,
we're going to get back to him. We're going to get back to him in the post game. See what it is
positive
that we can rummage through his shame. He's in
Boston.
Glass half full
kind of guy.
He is in Boston. He has got a hotel room. He is Metal Arc's basketball and porn correspondent.
Dan, you're a pressing journalist. Don't let him off the hook.
I'll get back
to it.
Keep
going.
I got to prepare for Michelle Tafoya, and I've got First Take. I got Poppy in the studio. He's eating a bunch of cashews, and Tony is ready to report on why it is that Mad Dog and Stephen A. are screaming at each other. Tony, what do you got for an update for us from the kitchen?
Dan, live from the kitchen here. I'm in the midst of a blizzard, actually, because the air chiller here is blowing about 47 miles an hour in my face. Right now, the guys are arguing. Doggy and Mari Stoudemire in on First Take today, and they've been arguing if a fourth ring would put Curry in the top 10 of all time. Doggy's got a bunch of newspapers in front of him, but they've been arguing about the 71-72 Lakers of Wilt Chamberlain and how Wilt Chamberlain wasn't as good as Bill Russell because he's got 11 rings to 2. And then all of a sudden, as I was hitting mute, Doggy said, Shaq's not better than Hakeem, which I didn't really understand that part. But yes, nonetheless, more report on that in a little bit. Newspapers have been ruffled. Very exciting.
Okay. More information that you have from over there. Again, Mad Dog continues to look very slick-haired. He looks revitalized and rejuvenated by being across from Stephen A. Smith now that Stephen A. Smith has sucked all of the gray out of Max Kellerman.
I love that the 1971-1972 Los Angeles Lakers are always being discussed on that program. Like, why... There can't be a viewer in First Take's demographic that wants to hear about basketball from 50 years ago. There just can't be. And, like, it's only the sheer force of Chris Mad Dog Russo's personality that makes that even palatable television.
I mean, what are your basketball takes here as Stan Van Gundy comes on with us and basically says he still expects Boston to win that series because he just thinks Boston is better than Golden State, period. Hard stop.
Well, first of all, I want to point out to Witty that Russo was 12 years old when the 71-72 Lakers played. So if he, as a 12-year-old, was enthralled by this to this point, there's probably a lot more people who romanticize that era, even though they probably barely remember it or remember it through the eyes of a child.
Sports is always greatest when you're 12 years old, right? Like that, like it never gets better
than
that.
Put it on the poll, Roy, please. Do sports ever get better than when you're 12 years old?
Probably not. Dan, to answer your question, though, I disagree with Stan, and I think that...
That's not the question I want answered.
Okay, well, I mean, you asked a question about how do I take Stan saying he still expects the Celtics to win, and I just feel like, whenever I'm asked a direct question, I like to give a direct answer, and so I'm just doing that for you, Dan Le Batard. Maybe say what you want to say. Say it with your chest. Take it off your head, whatever you want to say. But... I disagree with Dan. I disagree with Dan and I disagree with Stan as well. I disagree with Stan in that I think the Celtics might be on the ropes here. And the reason why
is clearly on the ropes. They're clearly on the ropes. I mean, it's not might be on the ropes. They're on the ropes.
They have two must-win games coming up.
They're clearly on the ropes. There's no disputing that the ropes are out and they're on them.
Must win for the Celtics? Must win?
Must win for the Celtics.
Wow. Yeah, but once we get to game 7, are both teams on the ropes?
That's a good question. Put that on the poll, Roy.
Can two teams be on the ropes?
In the corner.
Once you get to game 7, are both teams on the ropes?
The reason I say that is because if you look at what the Celtics did through much of the first four games, was they said, we're going to play drop coverage on Curry. Now, drop coverage on Curry is a little different than drop coverage on anyone else because on regular players, drop coverage means the big sags back to probably around the free throw line. For the Celtics, because the Warriors sit their screens so high, their big is waiting at the three-point line, which was still too much space for Steph Curry. And he torched them to 4 games. In the 5th game, they finally switched that up. They said, look, we're going to trap him. We're going to blitz him. We're going to meet him level with the screen to get the ball out of his hands quick. They did that. He had his worst game. But then you got Andrew Wiggins and everyone else going nuts. So they're between a rock and a hard place. On the one hand, they can continue to defend the way they did the first 4 games, say, we'll let Curry beat us, but no one else is going to beat us. But then you open yourself up to what happened in game 4, which is Steph Curry's supernova. If you stick with the adjustment you made, you say, hey, we might be able to throw a wet blanket on him, but we're opening ourselves up to everybody else going nuts. So which strategy does Ime Udoka and the Celtics use? We'll see.
Stan says the only weakness that the Celtics have is that they can't dribble.
No, I think there are other weaknesses. I think they can't dribble is a big one. Jaylen Brown in particular, the Warriors are forcing him to be the playmaker off the dribble and trying to get Tatum to pick the ball up. You've got the problem that Tatum, shot selection-wise, is having issues, right, in terms of not recognizing, I'm bigger than almost everybody that's trying to guard me. Let me get to the front of the rim. He is channeling full Mamba mentality with all of these mid-range jumpers. He's shooting great from three, and he's great at the rim, but he is consumed with this mid-range, this weird Kobe Bryant impersonation, which is going out with Kobe Bryant-level numbers as well. And then finally, Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart, ideally he's making shots, but when he makes shots, he starts to think that he's Jason Tatum. And he starts to, so there were a couple of shots there down the stretch. You look at the end of the game four, where both him and Brown, oddly enough, are battling one another to see who's going to be the hero. So I think there's some decision-making issues there. The dribbling issues is another one. The inconsistency with how they're going to defend Steph versus the rest of the team. And then, man, I hate to say it. I hate to be that guy. But I'm watching game four, and I'm like, oh, this is where that whole intangibles conversation comes in. This is the part where, like, they've been there, you haven't. They've faced adversity, you haven't. And this is where I think some of those things start to rear their heads.
Whittingham is tired of the way that Tatum is fetishizing
Kobe Bryant.
The death of Kobe Bryant and just, Kobe Bryant.
Just weird. Like, the texting him, the wearing his practice uniforms, while not playing well, like, I get it when someone means something to you, but, like, you're never teammates. Like, it's your idol, right? Like, I understand, like, celebrating your, I don't know. It's never a nice thing to say to someone, like, hey, deal with death how you want to deal with it. But I just found it strange the entire time. Like, the constantly bring up Kobe, Kobe this, Kobe that. It's just been weird.
Witty, allow me to be the vessel of evil and villainy that you're such a great journalist. I don't want you to wade into these waters. I'll wade into the waters for you. It's weird. It's weird not because, look, people have lost people all the time and have celebrated and cherished the memories of their close ones, right? But it seems like starting with Game 7 against the Heat, he's really revved up the Kobe machine, right? And to quote Michelle Beadle, she said this on her podcast, What Did I Miss? She said, it seems like something that should have been revealed like after the season was over, right? Celtics win a championship, and then he says, yo, I wore like a Lakers practice shorts underneath my shorts every game, or I had that wristband or whatever. The fact that he's bringing as much attention to it. Look, you grieve the way you want to grieve. But the look at me Louie-ness of, hey, by the way, you check out this elbow band here. Oh,
it
by the
sounds
way,
like you guys aren't allowing them to grieve, anybody to grieve how no. They want to grieve. And it sounds like you were resuscitating Doc Rivers there. It sounded like Doc Rivers just made an appearance there very briefly in your voice.
Allergies, man. Boston kicks my ass when it comes to allergies.
You sound like you're sick. You sound like you've got a cold.
It's I have congestion. Like every time I step foot in the city, it's just everything starts to build up.
You are telling people how to grieve.
No, I'm not. I'm saying you grieve how you want to grieve. Let's not make a television spectacle out of it. That's all I'm saying. No, if you're telling me the way I grieve is by making a television spectacle out of it, get the hell out of here.
You're not saying grieve the way you want to grieve. You're saying grieve the way you want to grieve as long as it's not a television spectacle.
Well, then put my name on it, Juju.
Tony, what do we have back there? What is Mad Dog screaming about now? What is Stephen A. screaming about now?
Very, very exciting. They're just getting back on. They're going to talk about the LIV Golf situation. But in a few minutes, we've got a very, very big Doggies A-list of the best fans by city. Top 5 list coming very soon.
I feel like the best fan is the one that's currently blowing into your face.
Well, no, that's a blizzard. Yeah, sorry. That's why I'm turning this way to make sure
so
that it doesn't
loud.
Hit me in the face.
It looks like you a music what? Video, a sensual music video, and a haunted house, the way the curtain is blowing behind you and that fan.
Hold on. Somebody get me. I'm blowing my hair in the wind. Here we go.
I can't see Tony, but I can hear the wind and I can hear it blow into his mic. But let me just say this. You people, there's no pleasing you, is there? A couple weeks ago, I was like, oh my God, it's so hot. How can we deal in here? And now it's so cold. Oh, it's a blizzard. Hey, you know what? Man up. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Get the job done. Stop complaining. That's what Havlicek would do. That's what the Spurs did in 2014 when the AC went out in game one. And if you want to hear all about that, Basketball Illuminati, Basketball Illuminati, Basketball
Michelle
Illuminati.
Michelle Tafoya next.
You still haven't answered the question.
You haven't come close to answering the question.
We ran out of time.
Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With three times the electrolytes of the lead in sports drink plus eight vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Are you heading to the airport on a long flight? Or do you need something after your flag football game? Well, if I was you, I would definitely go with Liquid IV just for the electrolytes so you don't feel run down. And I know for me, Liquid IV helps me start my day in the morning, and it helps give me the energy to do stuff like cut my yard and wash my car and work out and just face the day. And you can get your energy back while drinking something that's delicious. And when I say delicious, you can pick from flavors like pear, white peach, green grape, lemon lime, and more. Liquid IV is non-GMO, free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DAN at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration using code DAN today at liquidiv.com.
Hey, listening audience, it's Mike Ryan, and you're a sports fan if you're listening to this show. Well, that's up for debate. You may not know this, but Game Time is now an authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to first pitch, with killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, that's key, and their low price guarantee. Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. I was actually in Baltimore last season, always wanted to check out that ballpark, and I actually went to the Game Time app to actually see exactly what I was dealing with, and on top of that, I got a killer deal. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code DAN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code DAN for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
Don Levitard.
If you see a photo of fries, do you reach for it? Not unlike a pigeon flying into a sliding glass door.
I'm not kidding you. I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
You've done it to me.
Have you done that thing on like actual photographs where you try to zoom in on it with your fingers and you just make a big streak across it?
A bigger fry? Yes, I've licked my computer screen when it's on there. I love french fries.
Stugatz.
Who doesn't love french fries? I thought that was the one thing America could agree on. I thought that that was the one place where every citizen in our country would indeed be united across the 50 states.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Michelle Tafoya, who I've not talked to since the very nice time of doing PTI with her, and I've had nothing but cordial experiences with her, but I've read recently that you have been on the dark side, secretly on the dark side, and so walk me through. Good to see you again, Michelle, by the way.
Hi, I guess from the dark side. I didn't know that it was dark, but thanks for letting me know. Maybe I should turn on some more lights in here.
We have not seen each other in a long time. So yeah. Tell me more about where you were the last time we saw each other and what you've seen happen in America in the, I don't know, has it been 15 years since?
Wow, has it been that long, Dan? If it's been 15 years, so much has happened, and it's we're not in a good place in America. That's one thing I know. And part of it is because, with due respect, and I know you're half joking, people look at each other as being either on one end of a spectrum or the other, and that there's no middle. And as Matthew McConaughey put it very well the other day, there's a vast middle. And actually, I find myself in the middle and desperate to find common ground with people because I don't think we're as divided as we appear.
You don't though, Michelle, because it feels like we are that divided. No,
I know it feels that way. You know, feelings are one thing. Actually looking at things and dissecting them a little bit more and looking for facts is another. I know it feels that way, particularly if you're really dug in on your side. It feels that way. You can predict how every event in America is going to be discussed just because the usual suspects in the corners do the talking the loudest. I live in Minnesota. I was born and raised in California. I've worked a lot on the East Coast, both in Washington, D.C., New York, you know, and I've been all over the country doing my job for when I was covering the NFL for NBC and ABC before that. And there is a vast middle. And it's, as usual, a little quieter.
How is it that I think I'm in the middle and you think you're in the middle and I'm looked at as far left and you're looked at as far right when all I look at is, man, our leadership everywhere stinks. The Republicans seem ruthless to me and the Democrats seem weak and none of them represent me.
Then I wouldn't say that you're on the far left. I don't know who sees me on the far right. I mean, I'm a pro-choice libertarian. I don't know how that makes me far right. All I am is a fiscal conservative who really wants America to come together and for people to be able to realize their potentials and not be told that they're oppressed or that they are an oppressor. That's kind of boils it down for me. I'd like to see some law and order so people don't get hurt.
Let's just stop there for a second, right? Because I think one of the things that gets lost here, and to me, what I struggle with specifically where we earn our living, you know, you on the sidelines of a very big event where we are capitalizing on black bodies and my history in this sport and my talking about race relations for a long time is part of what ends up making me unpopular or different. Like some of the ways that you talk about race make it feel to me like the cry for equality feels too much like a threat for my liking.
The cry for equality?
Yes.
What have I said that makes you feel that way?
Not right now. I'm saying things that I have read and what I believe about, perhaps things I assume about your viewpoint, but I can't check all the boxes with you because, again, I don't know how you feel. You have said you're pro-choice. That does not fit with the checking of the boxes.
If I may, you led with your a pro-choice libertarian and your fiscal conservative, and then you said, I don't want to believe that one group is oppressed and another party is oppressors. And that is like, that is eschewing just, hey, I'm a fiscal conservative. Sociologically speaking, I am a conservative and I believe in law and order. These are all platform issues and slogans of a party that is not just fiscally conservative.
Law and order is a platform of a party that is not just fiscally conservative. What does that mean?
I imagine what you're getting to in law and order was like the hot button issue of the peaceful protest. Something that Jack Del Rio kind of stepped in. So it's a typically people that are conservative.
This is problematic. You're talking about a hot button issue that I'm not even discussing. You're making an assumption about something I said. No, law and order.
Michelle, I'm not. No, look, I'm.
You are. You no, just
I'm
said.
No, I'm independent. But when you say that you don't want to believe.
What you are, but you just assigned a value to something I said that was so benign and you've assigned the wrong value to it.
Okay, eliminate the Jack Del Rio part if you want to seize on that. You said that you would like to believe, I'm paraphrasing here, you don't want to feel like there is a group that there are oppressors, right? Can you explain that in your own words, what you mean by that?
Yes, I can. What is being taught in many places, and I don't know if any of you have kids in school. I do. I have two teenagers. And that the color of their skin automatically makes them racist at birth. So tell me how that makes sense. Let's just start there.
When it comes to critical race theory, I think critical race theory is held up as just don't reinforce. This is my take on it. This is a treetop view on it, and we're not going to get in the weeds on it. I think it's often labeled by the right as something, hey, we just don't want to be reminded of our nation's history. We don't.
That's not true at all.
Okay.
I'd like to be reminded. I want my kids to know. I've taught my kids about slavery and how abhorrent it is, and it's a disgusting place. And in fact,
so let's peel back. What is your specific problem once again with critical race theory? What is one issue in critical race theory that you vehemently disagree with that you think it's toxic and divisive?
I'd like you first to then define for me critical race theory because people use that as an umbrella term to capture I'm sorry. I'm affirming something for you.
No. Yeah, you are affirming. Like you and I agree there. I do think that critical race theory is held up as a blanket statement that people don't necessarily have much understanding of. So we're in agreement so far.
Why are you asking? Okay, so you're asking me what I think of what I have a problem with critical race theory.
Yes, that's a question.
So define it for me then, because I don't think we're always talking about the same thing. When people just throw out CRT, I'd like you to define it for me so I know what you're talking about specifically.
Well, for those that don't know and are just listening to audio, what you seized on as confirmation when I extended my arm was I was bringing in my fellow producer, Roy Bellamy, who feels very passionately about critical race theory and might be able to speak to it a little bit better than I. So I was just welcoming him to the floor, I guess. Thank you for the vine. We'll just welcome him in.
Yeah, basically, critical race theory is this country is built off of racism, like slavery and whatnot, and policies that are built this country is basically built off of slavery and racism and how that is affecting today's life.
Okay, so here's what I think about that. This country was built on racism and slavery, and we've done a lot to turn that around. And what I have an issue with now is my kids. Now, I'm Hispanic by background. Okay. My daughter, I adopted from Bogota, Colombia in South America. So she's got really nothing to do with this, but she's an American. She's an American citizen. My husband is pretty white. And so my son probably resembles a split between the two of us. So he's being taught that because he was born without dark skin, he's inherently racist. Can you explain that, how that is true?
Can you explain how that is actually happening?
Where is that being taught?
Because I don't see that textbook. So if you want to throw out mass blankets or accuse others of doing that, please tell me where in the syllabus that's being taught.
White fragility?
Is that being taught? Is that part of state curriculums?
This is interesting. You always go to, is that part of state curriculum? Here's one issue you guys need to know. First of all, do you have kids in school?
I do. She's very young, though.
Okay. How old is she?
She's two. So this is
okay. Okay. So this is.
But I did go to school, and I was never taught this.
Because this is a rather new phenomenon, wouldn't you agree? When was the first
white fragility being taught? I never took that class. I never had it as an elective.
White fragility is a book.
Right, but where in the syllabus is this? This is the first time I'm hearing about this book, let alone
Do you realize that not every school has the same syllabus,
right? Well, you realize critical race theory is a catch-all, and you're cherry-picking one book to boost your argument there are math books that are being banned that subscribe to critical race theory as a catch-all.
You asked me where this is being taught. Okay, so in my experience, and I'm not cherry-picking, kids are being taught, and there are these worksheets that are being passed out about your privilege because of the color of your skin. And White Fragility is a book that teaches you're inherently racist. And if you deny that you're racist, that just underscores the fact that you are racist. And if you accept that you're racist, then you're just, again, underscoring that you're racist. So there's no win there. I'm sorry. Why are you shaking your head? I've barely spoken 3 minutes on this program, and I feel like I've made three enemies.
Look, I'm letting you speak. I'm not cutting you off. I'm making faces just because I'm having quite a visceral reaction. But I'm letting you have the floor.
What am I saying that's so viscerally offensive?
You're cherry picking a book that is relatively an outlier, and you realize that critical race theory is being used as a catch-all to eliminate.
You were the one that brought up critical race theory. I didn't. All I said was
you did when it. You, I don't no, like, you brought up critical race theory without actually saying the words when you said I don't believe that we should continue to teach one group that they are oppressed and another group that they are oppressors. I seized
on assigned, and you assigned that to critical race theory.
I think you have in the past,
Michelle. How do you define it?
Those letters never came out of my mouth until they came out of your mouth.
All right, let's do it this way. When you say, I don't want to believe that one group is an oppressor and one group is oppressed, wouldn't you say that critical race theory is one of those driving forces that is forcing that division?
I would say that in my experience with my kids' school and the things I see being taught in my communities here in Minnesota, that to divide people by color and assign senses of spirit and feeling and belief to them based on the color of their skin before they even speak, which is I know what's happening here. Go ahead.
I'm not stopping you from speaking. You just stopped yourself from speaking. I'm a Latino man. I'm not infringing on your right.
But what the audience can't see is you saying, "Oh my God," and reacting.
Michelle, you've done that to me, and I'm not calling you out on it. I keep it moving because
you seem to be so angry with me, and
I'm not angry with you. I feel
so
like you're setting
me on this show to just come right out of the gate.
No, we. I think
assume
we
assume that I am some sort of. I don't know what you made the assumption. I'm on the dark side. Was like in the first 10 seconds of the interview. I don't understand this.
Okay, Dan was just framing it. I'm not getting anywhere, and I don't think either of us are going to change each other's minds, and I'm not seeking to change your mind, Michelle.
I'm not trying to change your mind. I wasn't here to change your mind.
No, I feel like we keep getting stuck on any time that I try to challenge you and have a discourse. And you keep getting set off by just my facial reaction. So I will stop talking and I will stop reacting facially. I do appreciate the time and I do appreciate the discourse. And I like to peel back. I think you said a lot of things that are informative. I think you held up one example when I counter with it's being used as a vessel to remove a lot of things that have nothing to do with the one specific instance that you're saying. I think that that's productive,
a productive conversation. Wait a minute.
But I also think that just to divide it in black and white, that's not just where the divisions are right now. If you see the liberties...
Oh, I agree with that.
I don't know where you stand on LGBTQ issues, but like I said, this sort of culture war is being held up as a catch-all, and critical race theory is just held up as a blanket statement. And it's censoring a lot of things that have nothing to do with what you're alleging. So I just wanted to press you on that.
What am I alleging?
Dan, I will hand it back to you. I'm sorry.
Michelle, sorry. The beginning.
What am I alleging?
Well, the beginning part of this, I was not walking you into a trap. I have not talked to you in a long time, and the last experience I had with you was lovely. I was not looking for this to become that. I am sorry, genuinely, that upon introduction, I was awkward and you misconstrued the entry point.
No, I knew you were joking. I honestly did know you were joking, Dan. What I'm concerned about right now is that I was asked some questions, and when I tried to answer with one example, I was told I was cherry picking before I could even get to other examples. So I've got kids in school who are being taught some things that make me uncomfortable. I want American history taught from top to bottom, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I've taught my kids at home, and they're being taught at school about all of it. What I don't appreciate is my kids being told that because of my son, especially not my daughter, because she's brown, I guess, she's not told the same things. If you want to jump in.
No, I was just curious, Michelle, what exactly she's being taught. Is white fragility a book in the syllabus in the school? Is that part of the curriculum? What is it specifically? What piece of literature is she being taught that you're taking specific exception to, because you've been speaking in generalities?
Well, because it's happening in generalities, and you may or may not discover this as your little girl grows up, but as school progresses, some ideas start to filter into the classroom that are, again, dividing kids by nationalities. So my son's first best friend in school, and I've used this example quite a bit.
I'm familiar with it. Go ahead with the audience. But I just would like to say you're afforded to speak in generalities, and I'm not. And so far, the one example that you held up is not an example that's being taught in school, but please continue.
So you know for a fact that...
No, I don't know for a fact what I asked you specifically what's being taught, and you spoke in generalities, yet you seize on me when I spoke in generalities. You haven't told me yet one piece of curriculum that's being taught in this school.
You held up
white fragility. No, you're going to tell me a story about lunch and how they were beautiful friends when they were younger, and they've grown more and more divided, potentially because of discourses like the one that we're having right now, because I, like you, often think that I am occupying the middle. And I am asking you, you said they're being taught specifically something about divisiveness and critical race theory. And I asked you to
please
pinpoint like what specifically they are being taught. Is there a book? Is there a piece of curriculum? Is there a teacher? Is there a homework assignment? Is there a paper, or is it more generalities?
It comes out in specific ways. Workbooks that I've seen in the classroom or work checklists about your privilege. And a lot of it stems from the color of one's skin. For me personally, to teach anywhere from third grade on to eighth grade that the color of your skin defines you and defines your character, I don't find it helpful in any way. My son has been afraid to raise his hand in class because he disagrees with some of what's being taught, and that he's, you know, because certain classes are oppressed and others are the oppressors, and it's very cut and dried. So these are the things that I hear coming home, not only from my own kids, but from other kids in school and other schools around my community. I have a pretty good network of friends that have kids at public and private and parochial schools and all the rest. So while I think it's really important to teach history and to teach about how this country was founded on slavery and what's gone on ever since through the civil rights movement up until today is supremely important, supremely. I guess where I have a difference of opinion with my school in particular is that everything is, your character is determined by the color of your skin. And that's not how I see the world. And that's not how I want my kids to be taught to see the world.
Well, this is clearly a state issue. We live in the state of Florida, and Governor Ron DeSantis has signed both the Stop Woke Act and the Don't Say Gay Bill in the law. And it's increasingly difficult for teachers in this state to teach students here anything about what's happening in this country about race. It's very difficult to talk to students about gender and about sexual orientation. And a lot of this is based off of how the parents feel. So a lot of this is kids being taught by the parents about race and about how to act towards women and how to love and everything like that. It's just making life difficult for people who are paid to teach our kids what's happened in history. Like a couple years ago, this show called Watchmen came out on HBO. That's when a majority of Americans learned about what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That's not even being taught in schools.
Which is ridiculous. It should be taught in schools. Every part of American history should be taught in schools. Every part of American history should be taught in schools.
So why are our politicians making it harder for that to be taught?
You know, it's interesting. I've read the what you referred to as the Don't Say Gay bill, and nowhere in that bill does it say don't say gay. So I think we're mislabeling that bill. And it really applies to a very narrow, a small window of time in a kid's education. And really, it, I mean, we're talking about young kids. They just don't, parents apparently in Florida do not want in the classroom this stuff taught as part of the curriculum. We've got lots of friends who have two dads or two moms. And that's very common in our circle of friends. That's not something that's being hidden or, you know, so I don't see how the realities of that can be ignored simply because, I mean, not everything has to be taught in school. And a lot of this stuff can be taught at home. And if parents decide and vote in people that want to represent their notion that, you know, I'd like to do this my way at home because we have our own social values. I mean, if we're going to be tolerant of everyone, sometimes that means being tolerant of people we really disagree with. But this country affords us that. So I think that, again, the Don't Say Gay bill has been mislabeled. And it's I don't see it as homophobic. I see it as saying in these grades, I think it's three through eight?
Yeah. Respectfully, Michelle, I don't think it's your place to say whether or not it's homophobic. I think the offended have a voice in this matter. And if they are saying it's homophobic, then perhaps we should listen to them.
That's totally appropriate. I'm fine with that. But I've read the bill. And sometimes everyone always says that words matter and facts matter. And they do. Yeah. You know, look, it's hard for me to put myself in the shoes of anyone in that LGBTQ community because I'm not in that community. But I do relate with a lot of those people. And I don't know a lot of people who are offended by this particular, but that's just me. That's in my experience. Yeah. So I guess I can't answer your question necessarily because I don't live in Florida.
Yeah.
But nowhere in the bill does it say don't say gay. And I think in the hallways, again, if you've got
No, but that it it says through its actions, don't say gay. And that's why it's kind of labeled that. But I understand what you're getting at, Michelle, and I'm sorry to cut you off there. I do feel like we're making progress. When I hear you speak about division and shaping the American experience, it is awfully idealistic. And I hear you say things like, I'd like to take in schools to teach civil rights through the civil rights movement through present day. Well, here in the state of Florida and other states, when the critical race theory hot button is pressed, it is used as a catch-all, and things like Tulsa or things eventually like George Floyd may be used as things that they can eschew. When you're out here on our show saying, I would still like to teach that, I am with you that the color of your skin doesn't define you. However, we are still living in an age where the color of your skin may define your experience as an American, how people are treated at you. It's why numbers from law enforcement are disproportionate to African Americans and minorities than they are to white males. It's a reality of the American experience right now, and school is supposed to train you in part for your life coming up. From kindergarten on up, you're learning about how to prepare for the next phase in adulthood. And I think critical race theory tries to ignore certain aspects of that. Maybe not you. I'm not saying Michelle Tafoya, but perhaps some of the politicians Michelle Tafoya supports, or certainly here in the state of Florida, Ron DeSantis. It is just basically ignoring parts of history that could be helpful so we can learn from it, because that's why we teach history, so we can learn from it.
I personally don't see any parts of history being banned from schools. I have not seen that. I don't see that.
You don't believe in the whitewashing of textbooks? You don't believe in that what has been taught before now is the same thing that you're objecting to, which is the history books have been whitewashed by omitting many of the things like, for example, Tulsa and any number of black societies that end up underwater physically because we don't know the history of this country.
I'm not going to go through the full list, but the state of Florida banned 54 mathematics books under the guise of critical race theory. They recently reinstituted 9 of those. So, and if you do some digging on who are some of the companies that are putting out these textbooks, there's all sorts of political donations. That's politics as usual. But my point is critical race theory is being used as a catch-all, and Dan brings up the point that it's being used to basically whitewash history books.
Yeah, I'm not in favor of that. I'm in favor of truth. I think one of the problems is, and you guys just alluded to this, who's presenting what, right? Whose facts are we reading? Whose facts are we looking at? It's become impossible, in my mind, to trust any textbook. I don't care where it comes from. To trust any newspaper, to trust institutions, because they have become so politicized. So when I open up a newspaper, I'm almost automatically, I look at a headline and I just go, who wrote the headline? What is this really? Who wrote this piece? And what was their agenda? It does not seem to me that we in America have this straight line thinking of fact, objective fact anymore.
Okay, but no, we do disagree on the facts, though, Michelle, because at least in part, you say don't say gay is not part of that bill. You've read the bill. Don't say gay in words is not part of that bill. But that legislation, you said you've read the bill, felt homophobic to me. So when you read that legislation or the portions of it, why does it not feel homophobic to you? What do you think teachers are going to be doing in schools with the sexual orientations of kids?
Well, you know, look, it's anecdotal, everything that we're hearing, right, of what's going on in some schools. And I think what's happened, and we all talk about this, is that during COVID, and we watched our kids on their Zoom classes, and people saw some things they didn't like. I am reticent, you guys, to speak so much about Florida, in which you are ensconced and I am not. Each state is a laboratory trying its own stuff. And the only problem that I have with what you're saying about those three words, don't say gay, is because those words don't live in that bill. And so if it feels homophobic to some people, I understand that.
It is homophobic. Like it's almost impossible to read the language of that legislation.
Depends on the lens you're reading it through, doesn't it?
Well, this is what you're saying about alternate sets of facts. I don't believe both sides are dealing with facts. I believe that for a long time, what we've been seeing is the facts don't matter, and everyone goes to their corners and grab the selective facts that support their bias, so that they can continue reaffirming their beliefs.
And so that's what I just said. There's no attention to just plain old facts standing on their own. And by the way, this is why we're having so much trouble trusting in these institutions, because they do take a fact and spin it. I mean, it's, the spin is dizzying, okay, right? But, from both sides.
But help me.
And so, so where do we go? Where, well, whom do we trust?
Help me, as people who get accused all the time of checking the same boxes, if people make assumptions about you that are unfair because you have a viewpoint in one place, how do you feel about what you see happening in legislation and governance that violates women's rights when it comes to abortion?
Well, I see that the I'm sure you're referring to the Roe case being leaked. If Roe v. Wade is overturned, it is my understanding legally this does not ban abortion nationally. It turns it back to the states. Many states will do that. And I think that's insane. I think that women should have a right to an abortion.
I don't know the details, the specifics. I've only read quotes about why you left NBC Sports.
I thought about leaving 3 years ago. I gave my notice in, I think it was 2018. And my producer, Fred Godelli, said, well, what if you worked half of the season and just get me through to the next Super Bowl? And this is a long, over 3 years conversation. And the only reason I wanted to leave is because I wanted to do stuff like this. I wanted to have discourse where hopefully we could find common ground and build from the common ground. And that's what I'm trying to do with my podcast. That is why I left. I was not fired. I was not asked to leave. I was asked to stay. I chose to step out into the danger zone, if you will, of being public with this kind of conversation so that hopefully we could reach across and find some common ground and bring a little bit of sense back to the country and some unity back to the country. We're never going to be unified on every issue. Never. I'm convinced of that. History tells us that. But we are so weakened right now by these great divides. The fact that we all love sports and we're sitting here talking like this, and it's a little bit heartbreaking that I feel like we're talking past one another. I'd like to get past talking past one another and really listening and engaging with people. So that's my goal. So that is why I left and I chose to leave. And that's that. That's it.
How much can you blame the media for the division in this country right now?
I blame it a lot. But again, that's kind of, it is really easy to point on social media, Twitter, Facebook, you know, MSNBC, Fox, CNN, Newsmax. But we are all individuals in the end with the agency to take our life's experiences, take our morals and apply them to what we see. And you know, I think if we were all to tune out the media, if we took like this national month holiday, people would get along really, really well. It's funny. I go to baseball games, my son's baseball games, where all the parents are vastly different in terms of their politics, their social backgrounds, whatever the case may be. And we all get along great because, you know, no one really talks about the politics and all of that. And we have a lot in common, basic stuff. We want to feel safe. We want our kids to feel safe at schools. We want some peace in the world. We want our kids to have a future they can look forward to and be excited about, be productive, happy people. I think at the end of the day, and I hate that phrase, sorry, but in the final analysis, those are the things we all really care about and should be working on. And there are so many tangential things, not that they're not important, but life is really short and we get this short amount of time to have an impact on it. And we're spending so much of it fighting over things that I'm not sure really are existential, that they really make or break us as a society.
You would say that, except I'd stop you on, we also want a universe where everyone is treated fairly and safely by the police as well. I think we can agree that your experiences at home might not be the same as they are in other parts of the country, no matter how diverse you think your neighbors are.
Right. I would definitely agree with that. We know that to be the case. So where do we start? We've identified that. We know that that's an issue. And what we saw, look, I'm in Minneapolis. So the George Floyd incident was in my backyard. It was one of the most shameful, atrocious, heinous, sickening things I've ever seen in my life.
Michelle, that teaches, though, critical race thinking, you know, that would teach how the systemic police brutality that you find is built by police orders that descend from the slave system and treat whites differently than they do others. Like, that's at the soul of the facts and the history.
So then how, for conversation's sake, okay, Dan, how is it then when I talk to a number of black police officers, they don't agree with that, what you just said?
Because they're police officers.
Meaning?
Meaning they're going to defend their own.
Not all of them. No one defended Chauvin. No one defended Chauvin.
You don't believe that the history of police brutality in this country through a militarized police force is something that descends historically and factually from the chasing down of slaves, that that's where the police, where the idea of police was invented?
That's a really loaded question. You're asking me to say yes or no to whether or not I believe that that's what policing is.
But, okay, critical race theory can then teach us, though, what some of the roots are in the systemic racism you will find everywhere from textbooks to government, no?
Critical race theory, one important word in critical race theory is theory. Critical race theory is fine to be taught at certain levels of school, where people have the brain power to understand what theory is and what all this means. I'm not sure teaching all first graders that police officers are one way or the other.
Oh, they're not teaching that to the first graders. They're not teaching that to the first graders. That is a college level course. They're not teaching that in elementary.
Okay, well then if CRT is college level, I don't have any problem with it at all.
Then what have we been doing for the last little bit here? We didn't find common ground, but closer. Not yet pre-K. You don't want it taught in pre-K.
I think right now we have such a low percentage of kids who can even read. Here in Minnesota, only 47% of white kids can read at their grade level. When they get to college, Dan, they can read critical race theory or whatever else they choose. Okay. To read.
Progress for the moment. We will pick it up at another time. I'll see if I can get you to eighth grade. And by the end, we're going to chisel you down. First graders are going to be taught facts about racial history in this country over time. Her new podcast, Sideline Sanity, launched last month. You get it wherever you get your podcast.
Dan,
yes, ma'am.
Dan, you can't get away with that.
What happened?
I have always said I want history taught truthfully from beginning to end to every grade level. That I have no argument with. So please don't put words in my mouth that I don't want eighth graders taught history. That's not at all where I stand.
I want to teach first graders that, hey, the police descended from catching slaves.
Do you have a first grader?
I don't have one yet, but I want them to know the true history. That's a fact.
Well, I think we all agree that we want race and history being taught truthfully. And at least here in the state of Florida, my governor is taking liberties with what exactly truthfully is. Look, there is a middle ground, but we don't agree on what the truth is.
I'm not going to be able to sum it up in the time that we have left. So this is why I'm saying we're questioning all our institutions right now because we don't know who's telling us the truth. It's heartbreaking to me.
She doesn't have the time to do it now, but I'm assuming you're doing it on Sideline Sanity, correct? So if they want more of your thoughts here, that's where they can get them. Yes, Michelle?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm sorry if that was wearying for you. I'm sorry if it was wearying for the audience. It was good seeing
you. I forgive you.
It was good seeing you again.
Likewise. Take care, you guys.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.